The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Hello and welcome to our show today. Our guest is Lori Marshall, who is one of the most optimistic, clear-visioned, and persistent people I have the pleasure to know. Full disclosure, we are friends. And each time we meet, Lori has stories to tell that lift the human spirit. I mean it. She works harder than anyone I know to create a life in which creativity, hers or the people with whom she comes in contact, is prioritized to the top of the list of important things to do. Lori is working with an organization called Create Peace Project, which will be traveling to Sarajevo this summer for a conference on world peace. We'll tell you more about that in a few minutes. Lori is precisely the kind of person we had in mind when we created this show, Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Deeds. She's a person to whom we've given a grant at Bread for the Journey. She's a person who had a vision for a better world for all of us, and she commits her days to creating that. We're going to talk today about her life trajectory and what contributed to her worldview. Her story is the opposite of the kinds of stories we hear on the evening news. This is the untold story of a life that millions of Americans live. People working to improve the quality of life on Earth. And we're proud to be able to highlight them on Bread for the Journey's show, Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Deeds. Bread for the Journey is a grant-making organization with 26 chapters in the United States. And in fact, that's how I met Lori. She applied for a grant from our Marin County chapter, of which I am a member. She came to my home to make a presentation for a grant to fund the art supplies needed to make a mural, a large, beautiful mural that was designed and painted by homeless and formerly homeless teens. She was representing an organization called Ambassadors of Hope, which works tirelessly to help homeless teens here in Marin County. Lori was the leader of the art project. We fell in love with her, we fell in love with her project, and ended up giving her $850 for the supplies she needed. This is one of the most beautiful things about running a Bread for the Journey chapter. We get to meet some of the finest people who reside in a community, and we get to help them achieve their goal of helping others. If you have any interest in starting a Bread for the Journey chapter, contact me on our website, breadforthejourney.org. And if you'd like to support our work, you can donate there as well. And from the bottom of my heart, I thank you so much. And now I'd like to introduce you to Lori Marshall. Lori is a certified social studies and art teacher with 35 years experience bringing nature-based, project-based, arts-based, and story-based learning to public education. She is an international leader in using art for peace building. Her work includes consensus training through collaborative murals with the UN, NASA, the Department of the Interior, the Army Corps of Engineers, hospitals, hospices, businesses, low-income communities, and prison inmates. As an educator and mother of two sons, she has dedicated her life to unleashing people's inner genius to heal the world, focusing on intergenerational support to empower youth to promote peace through creativity. That is the vision of Create Peace Project, where she is program manager. She is also on the faculty of Awakening Arts Academy, where she is developing an Arts for Peacebuilding certificate program. Welcome, Lori.
Thank you, Mariana. I am so excited to be here with you.
I'm glad you're here. As a young child, 8 years old, you wanted to be a teacher, and in fact, your dream or vision was transcendent considering how young you were. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, I noticed that I was happiest being creative with little kids, and where there was no competition and there was joy and everyone had a vital role to play. I created plays and everyone had an important job to do in the play. Or we would make up stories and everyone had a heroic job to do in the story. And it was so different than much of school, where we were always judged and compared. And I especially saw my friends and family members at school suffer feelings that they were less than. And it just didn't make sense to me. And what grew out of that, based on my intimate relationship with nature, was this concept that human beings can be more like nature is, where every organism has a role. And this I intuited as a child and have come to passionately believe in as an adult, that we need to function all of our institutions as ecosystems where everybody's gifts are needed and used.
You know, that I'm constantly aware of how children have these incredible insights that we, I think over time, I don't want to say we forget them, but unless they're held up and encouraged and supported in some way, they kind of disappear into the background of our lives. And then little by little, if we're lucky, we bring them back to the surface. It sounds to me like you were one of those kids who had kind of an incredible awareness and insight, I would call a big truth. Mm-hmm. And would it be fair to say that you were able to hang on to that, or did you lose it for a while and then have to come back to it?
Oh, I definitely lost it and came back to it and lost it again and came back to it and lost it again. Mm-hmm. And the coming back is, you know, it's the spiral of facing issues at one point in your life, and the same issues pop up, and there they are at another point of your life, but you recognize them more quickly, at mm-hmm. least I do now. And one of the things that experience as a child gave me was really valuing other children's genius. And that's what I've been paying attention to throughout my career as an educator. And I think it's what Jesus meant when he said, a child shall lead them. Because if we really listen to our inner child and the brilliance of children, we'll have a better world. It's guaranteed.
Mm-hmm. Did you think that you wanted to be a teacher when you were a kid?
Yeah. At 8 years old, I knew I wanted to be a teacher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can imagine that worldview that you were developing, what you could see and what yes. wasn't happening in the classroom, was something that you sort of stepped in and thought, I could do this better.
Exactly. Yes.
So you said as a kid that you wrote plays. Were there other creative things that you did?
I had an amazing dance teacher named Genevieve Jones who studied with Martha Graham, and this was in the 50s. And she conducted dance classes by having us live in our imagination and move from there. And I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and believe me, there were not many people doing this. There were ballet classes, which I attempted, but they didn't capture me the way this form of modern dance did. And I think Genevieve Jones gave a tremendous support to my belief in imagination and creativity.
Mm-hmm. So you wrote plays and you danced. Anything else?
Well, I had liked to draw. And I doodled a lot. And what my heart was set on drawing was a tree. I felt a really close relationship to trees. And I tried to draw a million leaves on a tree. And I just gave up in total frustration and stopped drawing completely. And I had no one in my life that said, you can draw the big, simple shape of the tree.
You didn't have a Genevieve Jones of drawing or painting to help.
I did not. And it just, I withdrew in failure.
But something happened in your early 20s that inspired you to resume drawing. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I got my teaching certificate from Antioch College, which I loved as a college because it was very hands-on and reality-based with a work program. And I fell in love with my reading teacher there, and we got married. And at 22, our relationship was on the rocks. And I had a teaching certificate, and I had a dream that was dashed, and I also realized that I had no clue what I was experiencing. I'd been so outer-directed meeting the needs of the students that I was not processing my own feelings. And the person I was married to had a belief that everyone was an artist. And he said, of course you're an artist. Of course you can draw. And so I started drawing. And that miraculously gave me insight into what I was experiencing. Things would come out of my hand onto the paper that would shock me and surprise me. And I would say, oh my God, I'm really upset. I'm really angry. I'm really sad. I can grieve on the paper. And I started to draw and draw and draw.
So So it became an opening for you to be able to paint on paper and see what was going on inside of you.
Yes, a literal mirror, internal mirror.
So you had a teaching degree at that time. Did you begin teaching? I mean, were you working as a teacher?
So I worked as a counselor in the DC public school systems, and then I moved out to rural Virginia, and I found the person who would be the father of my children, Rex Slack, who was an artist. And I did not teach art, and I actually didn't start teaching formally until I got a master's degree in art and education. And my first teaching job was in rural Virginia as the teacher of gifted and talented children. And I integrated my love of people and groups, which is, you don't go into teaching necessarily if you want to be alone,
right,
with my love of art in being a public school teacher, so and an artist in residence. So as I raised my sons, I was I didn't work full time. I worked as an artist in residence and for a lot of the time.
And you had an experience with a child that led to the Singing Tree Project. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Right. So I made a mural with everyone in an elementary school in Hillsboro, Virginia. I believe there were 250 students, and everybody had a beautiful contribution to make to the mural. And when it was all done, 8-year-old Meredith Miller said, I wish the whole world could see our painting, and then the whole world would be happy. And then she said, what if the whole world made a painting together? And that was a life-changing moment for me, because that simple vision of a child that we could all create together, it stirred something so deep in my soul. And I said, yes, of course. And then I said, well, how in the world could you do that? You couldn't possibly do that. No way you could do that. I went to my high school art class that I was teaching, in Rappahannock County, Virginia, and one of my students handed me a piece of paper that had a picture of a world all divided into little pieces as computers can do. So this was, again, in the 90s. We were just beginning to learn about photomosaics, and I said, well, of course, that's the way it could be done. And then
I'm going to back you up for a second.
Yes.
I don't really understand that. You saw an image of the world. Say a little bit more about that.
It was my student. I told everybody about the idea, my art class, right away. Listen to this crazy idea. And one of the students handed me an image of the Earth that was divided up into like maybe 300 little squares. And that gave me the idea of doing something that had many pieces to it, which I had not thought of. And
I see. Instead of one painting, it comes together as one painting, but each little piece is done in a different location,
yes,
in a different way with different people, and the mosaic comes together. I understand. Thank you.
Yeah. Yes. So then somebody handed me the book The Singing Tree by Kate Sarity, which is a beautiful book about racism in World War I. And Kate Sarity's father was a Hungarian soldier, and he crawled all night long on his belly with his fellow soldiers to escape Russian soldiers. And they grew more and more terrified as the night went on because everything had been destroyed by war. There wasn't one living thing. And when the dawn came, a tree had survived. And in that tree were hundreds of birds who aren't normally together singing a song that had never been heard before. And what struck me about the story is that our Earth is like the singing tree of the solar system, because there is no life that we know of for billions of miles around. And we can choose to destroy our Earth and each other, or to create something beautiful that's never been seen before. And so with my love of trees, I developed this really simple structure of creating a tree on the Earth in space that would be a big collaborative structure. And I've been making a forest of these trees, and other people have too. And each tree, which can be 8 feet by 4 feet is the smallest, and 16 feet by 8 feet is the biggest, with 50 people to 1,300 people working on one, is a different conversation that is of value to the community that's creating it. And they've been about drug addiction, autism, homelessness, thankfulness, appreciation, biodiversity. And the structure is based on how science and biology works, which is it's replicable. It has a clear goal, but how the local conditions determine the form of the tree, and it's interdependent. Everybody's working together for the sake of a whole.
Well, we're going to take a break right now. We're going to come back and talk a little bit more about these singing trees, okay?
Okay.
Thank you so much. To our listeners, stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you a single parent trying to create the balance between home life and work life? You may be running a successful business, but how are your relationships with your family and children? If you're one of the thousands of people trying to juggle it all, tune in to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood, hosted by Chris Efesiou. Chris is the portrait of the success story, coming to the U.S. with no language skills, founding and growing several businesses while raising his daughter from age 7 to adulthood as a single dad. Listen every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
What does a visual workplace mean to you? How does it contribute to operational excellence? And what steps do you take to put it powerfully in place? Listen to The Visual Workplace, Work That Makes Sense, to find out. Each week, Dr. Gwendolyn Galsworth, visual workplace expert and award-winning author, shares tools and strategies to help you make the workplace to speak at a glance, without saying a word. Learn to work safer, faster, better, and at far less cost, no matter what business you're in. Tune in to The Visual Workplace every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business. The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com. You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back, and we're here today talking with Lori Marshall. And Lori, we were talking about this Singing Tree project before we took our break. Tell us a little bit about how many murals you've created in how many countries, and maybe focus in and tell us about one of them that you created.
Sure. There have been 32 trees made so far. They're visible on Create Peace Project's website under projects. About 14,000 people from 50 countries have participated, and each of these people have heard the idea that the Earth is the singing tree of our galaxy and have heard the story of the singing tree. And the beauty of the structure, what I love so much is that I use it as a leadership development tool and work with a group of people, usually young people. My youngest leaders were in fifth grade, mm-hmm. and they design the tree. They decide what kind of tree it is. They decide what the universe is going to look like behind them. They decide how the Earth is going to be portrayed. One high school kid wanted the Earth portrayed as Pangaea, when all the continents were connected, as a symbol of unity. Students in Denver area decided they wanted to do an aspen tree and put three trees on the painting because the aspen forest is one organism, so that would be a symbol of unity. Another group of 26 of kids from 26 countries wanted to have the Earth be represented as a yin-yang, and they put all their thumbprints on it. So it's a structure to breathe imagination into. And then this group of leaders will create all the parts of the tree, the many leaves and the many pieces of the Earth and the trunk and the stars, and then they'll be the ones who assemble it. And
it's beautiful.
Yeah,
it's really beautiful.
And in the process, they learn about critical thinking, collaboration, creativity, and communication, which are the 21st century skills businesses say they need for people in this time.
Say the four things again.
Critical thinking, mm-hmm. collaboration, mm-hmm. communication, mm-hmm. and creativity.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, your life work combines the ideas that through creativity we can create peace. And we've been talking about your creative growth and the singing trees. I'd like to ask you about the genesis of your deep beliefs about peace.
Thank you for that wonderful question. My parents, Alice and Stan Marshall, met during World War II at Bucknell College in central Pennsylvania. And my father was from New York City and was Jewish, and my mother was from central Pennsylvania and was Lutheran. And neither one of them had a deep connection to their religious heritage, but they wanted to have a meaningful religion in their life, and they looked around and they chose Quakerism. And I had the joy of being raised in a very vital Quaker community in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Many people confuse Quakers with Amish, and it's partly because they both come from a deeply nonviolent approach to life. Quakers don't have the kind of restrictions that the Amish have on them.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1954, my parents took me to a Quaker conference, and there was Martin Luther King.
Oh, how old were you?
I was five.
Mm-hmm.
And I was short, and I was in a... As all five-year-olds are. And I was in a very crowded, jam-packed, long, narrow room, and he was at the far end of the room, and I couldn't see him. And I could feel this love and electricity and excitement that I'd never felt before. And he was saying, we are all brothers and sisters in the same family, which as a five-year-old made perfect sense to me. And that resonated in me in a very cellular way. And the Quakers had given him, I think, $3,000 to go to India to study nonviolence. And that's a very similar process to what Bread for the Journey does, giving these small grants that have enormous impact. Mm. And
he went to India to study with Gandhi. I never knew that about his history.
I'm not sure if Gandhi was still alive.
Or studied at the Gandhi Institute.
But, yeah, he studied Gandhi's methods, but I'm not sure if he... I don't know the history on that.
Mm-hmm.
So I watched people be bullied in... some in my family, because we were an imperfect family, and in school, and I watched a lot of racism in Pittsburgh. We were thrown out of our house when I was a kid because we had too many brown-skinned people coming to our house in a white neighborhood.
Mm.
And, you know, it all didn't make any sense to me. And I dreamed when I was 11 years old that I was negotiating a peace between Khrushchev and Kennedy.
Not the things I was dreaming about at 11.
Exactly, yes. I was also deeply affected by the stories of people suffering from violence,
mm-hmm.
be it violence in my city of Pittsburgh, excuse me, or violence of war, the Laotian War was going on, and so my compassion was very high. And as I experienced art helping me to heal my grief and to see more of my worldview and to honor other people's worldview, because they drew and painted such different things, I began to see that the actual act of creativity was healing. And then I've learned as an adult that when you do something creative, you release oxytocin, which is the hormone that is released when you nurse a child, when you fall in love. It's the hormone of connection.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it also releases endorphins, which is the body's way of relieving pain. So people who are hurt people. And the underlying suffering and fear that is the seed of violence can be relieved by people expressing their pain in this beautiful, shareable form that doesn't damage anybody's bodies. So I began to be more and more interested in the neurobiology of peace and how it all works. And I'm working on a product, a painting that's 18 feet long by a foot high. And it's a timeline. And it's the purpose of this painting is to give compassion to how hard we've been working to make a world that's free of violence, and we don't even know it. So on one side of the 18 feet, about 13 feet of it, is how long the dinosaurs were on Earth. About 4 feet of it is how long the big mammals were on Earth. And the last 2 inches is how long the human being has been on Earth.
Wow.
And that correlates with the development of our reptile brain, which is, where all of our automatic systems are, including when we feel our body is in danger, we attack. And the how long the big mammals were in brain is the power of the limbic brain, which is where we make our bonds and connections and love. And the little last 2 inches is how long our neocortex has been around, where we think. So we seem to be constantly in the state of shock that people don't think very much. But in fact, it's a new muscle. And on the back of my 18-foot painting, it's divided into 365 sections. And 360 of those sections is how long, we were hunters and gatherers, which is about 3.2 million years, where we knew about 150 people in our life and we trusted them and they were our tribe and they greeted us in the morning asking us what our dreams are, as Francis Weller would say. And we were completely safe with that tribe, and anybody who was outside of our tribe was potentially lethal. If we moved beyond our tribe, we could be killed by either big animals or a different tribe. And so we became very quick to see that difference is danger. And then when we left the savannah 5 days ago out of this 365-day year, we started interacting with other tribes. And we started to develop this part of our muscle, of our brain, that is based in curiosity and faith. And the excitement that comes from difference as opportunity is what is engaging our world now. And we have this huge wiring and history of seeing difference as danger. So all the ethnic wars that happen are like, hey, that was the norm. And the fact that we have a United Nations is so huge. The fact that we have a nation, the United States, that's based on the idea that there's liberty and justice for all, and that all tribes could possibly live together, is huge. It is such a new baby idea. And the fact that when somebody feels excluded, it registers in our brain the same place where we experience physical pain, explains why Columbine happened and Young Cho killed the people in Virginia Tech. These people felt excluded. And
difference equals danger.
And difference equals danger. So with the work that I'm doing and that many people are doing, we are actually helping to rewire the human brain so that difference equals opportunity. Mm-hmm. And when you have an experience with art, you're always bringing together different materials to create something new. And that practice helps us understand the possibility that two different points of view can come together and produce new understanding as opposed to just pain.
Yeah. I do see that in all kinds of creative endeavors. It's just, you walk into a library, for example, and you look around and you go, how many different minds at work here to create on the page these very unique expressions of that made up all these books? Or the same is true when you go to a museum where you see different artists' work on display, and they could be just so incredibly different. Or even just watching the Grammys and seeing the musicians, like, from, you know, this wide spectrum of creative energy and juice, or just even looking at, you know, what's available on TV that's music, whether it be, you know, something on KQED or something more mainstream, or something like folk music. It's just amazing when you think of the wide range of creativity there is on the planet.
Oh my God. Yes.
And so I understand this piece of how you in your mind brought it together with how the awareness became difference as opportunity.
Yes. And it's true in science and invention and the,
of course,
the, what you were saying makes me think of, you know, how did we get this planet with such diverse life forms? You know, where every snowflake is unique, and where the millions of different kinds of insects all have their jobs to do and all have their shapes, and the beautiful flowers are, you know, everything has this purpose and this role. And
it's just an amazing thing. And your painting, that the way you described it over the radio, is a beautiful thing. I mean, I could actually visualize how much time, you know, in terms of how much space was taken up by the previous types of brain. I mean, I'm not explaining this very well, but I know that this 2 minutes, this 2-inch piece at the very end is the brain that we're dealing with now, which is the neocortex, right?
Well, it's the brain that we have now, plus the reptile and the limbic brain.
Right.
So, you know, finish what you were saying.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So, we now feel under attack in new ways. That's different than when you were living as a hunter and gatherer, and, you know, there could be a grizzly bear or a saber-toothed tiger on your next step. But we work in these institutions where there's all these unspoken status and hierarchy and being put down, and that all feels like attack. So our reptile brain has this low level of engagement, and it gets very high when you go into battle. And throughout all time, when people go into battle, they start killing everything that moves, you know, and it's like we're so shocked in our civilized way of how could they have killed the women and children. But it makes so much sense. If you're using your reptile brain, you do not think. There is no thought.
And it's instinct.
It's total instinct. And so if we give the young people the training of this practice of being able to be in their own bodies and center themselves through breathing and visualizing what they need and what they want and what everyone needs and wants, and then practice being creative and never lose that, because every kid comes in, oh my God, totally creative. There's not one kid ever born who was not being creative and inventive. And we have to preserve that in our education system and hold the safe space.
Yeah. So in a sense, what happens, we've got to go to break in a minute, but I just want to wrap this up. In a sense, what happens is that as we nurture our creativity, we are developing new kind of neural pathways, or a development of the neocortex part of the brain.
Well, actually, the creativity, I understand, is in a different spot in the brain. But what we're looking for is to have more connections to all parts of the brain, so that you have access to your creative part, your logical sequential part, your being able to experience your feelings, which I was not able to do in my youth very, very well. So it's what we're doing is building the connections between all the parts of the brain,
so that we have a balanced brain, so that we're Yeah, got it. Okay. So yeah. We've got to take a break. To our listening audience, stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
Did you ever stop to think that financial health can be a lot like physical health? The financial physician, Luz Gattigna, has helped people on the radio for nearly 15 years. And now he's part of the Voice America Business Channel. By using medical analogies to discuss financial solutions, Lou actually makes the process easier to understand and will help you chart your own financial fitness. Tune in to The Financial Physician, live every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, and on demand anytime on the Voice America Business Channel.
Tune in to Patricia Raskin Positive Living on VoiceAmerica.com every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 11 a.m. Pacific Time. This program brings you practical and inspiring principles for living a more authentic, engaging, and passionate life. Patricia's guests will give you a formula for connecting, giving, forgiving, and miraculous living. So tune in and call in to Patricia Raskin Positive Living Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 11 a.m. Pacific Time right here on the Voice America Variety Channel. It's practical, positive solutions for a happy, empowered, and successful life.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back, and we're here talking with Lori Marshall about creativity to create peace on Earth. So you have an event coming up this summer in Sarajevo. Why don't you tell us about that, Lori?
Well, this is a dream come true for me. Create Peace Project has been invited to come to the Sarajevo Peace Event. And this is the 100th anniversary of World War I, which began in Sarajevo. And a brave group of young people of mixed ethnicities in Sarajevo have put out the call to people all over the world to come to Sarajevo and send a message of peace, that we can have a century of justice and peace instead of a century of war like we had in the 20th century. World War I was the kickoff of about 58 declared wars in that century, and who knows of all the undeclared wars. And it's very personally meaningful to me because I met a young woman 20 years ago in Virginia who is now coordinating this peace event. And I'm so thrilled to be going, and we are Create Peace Project is going to be kicking off an Indiegogo campaign in the next couple of weeks to spread the word about the peace event and to spread the word that peace is possible and that art has a vital role to play in creating peace. And we'll be asking for help to get us there. And we'll be honoring the people that support this Stand for Peace with really unique images. I'm going to be doing the Singing Tree of Sarajevo with the conference participants. And my colleague Ross Holzman, the founder of Create Peace Project, is going to be doing a peace exchange. And that involves 2,500 kids from the United States and Canada creating a postcard with their unique image of peace and a message of peace on the back, which Ross will take to Sarajevo, and he will work with 2,500 kids in Bosnia to make their message of peace, and which he'll take back to the students in the United States and Canada, and some of the artwork will be displayed at the conference. There are, I think, over 100 different organizations are participating, and one of the main organizers in Sarajevo is Art Grupa, which was co-founded by Aida Topic, the coordinator and my beloved friend from 20 years ago.
How did you meet her?
She came to Virginia during the war to escape in 94 to escape
the Bosnian War?
The Bosnian War, yeah. Mm-hmm. She was 16 and her family came.
And you were teaching art at the time, and that's how you made the connection?
No, the call went out to our community, from our community, to give support to their family, and that's how I met her.
Got it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And now here she is.
Yes.
20 years later, so she's 26, 36.
Yes, and she is the mother of two, and she also has gravitated to this concept of art being a healing tool. And Art Grupa believes that creativity is everyone's birthright, is what they say on their website. And our Indiegogo campaign will also go to support their efforts. And they have been using Let's Create Peace, which is a resource that Ross and I wrote. That has daily peace practices, and it has 12 Art for Peace projects, instructions on how to do them step by step, and peace studies, which are basically encouraging young people, and I encourage everybody to do this, to gather the stories of people that are creatively meeting violence and transforming it, and sharing those stories in beautiful, creative ways. And
how can people get their hands on that book, Let's Create Peace?
They can get their hands on it through our website, which is createpeaceproject.org. And you can also donate to our trip to Sarajevo if you just go to createpeaceproject.org/donate. And there's a donate button on the first page also. Yeah, so this curriculum is being used in Brazil and in Atlanta, Georgia, and Uniontown, Pennsylvania. And we want it to be available for everybody.
So tell me a little bit about this conference coming up in Sarajevo. What are you going to be doing there, Lori?
Well, I'm going to be working with a team of young Bosnian artists. And they will decide what kind of tree they want to make for the singing tree and how they want to portray the universe and how they want to portray the earth and what theme, what conversation they want to have. Each singing tree has a driving question.
So all the trees that you've made all around the world or participated in the making of, say, mm-hmm. all have a question, a driving question. Can you give us an example of what some of those questions are?
Yeah. So we did one, the fig singing tree of the child, and its driving question was, what is your wish for children? And children who had escaped the sex trade in Cambodia, Laos, and Thailand made images for this tree, as well as kids in gang-ridden Oakland and Santa Rosa and kids in privileged Marin and elders also made images for that because the whole world's invited.
Right, with the question being, what is your wish for children?
Right, and for the oak singing tree of autism, there is what do you pay attention to? because that's a question that people who have autism and Asperger's can relate to. It's very concrete. And for the Redwood Singing Tree of Biodiversity, the driving question was, what do you see in your community? What different life forms do you see in your community? So we just paid attention to the non-human world. But we all, and we also asked out, and what is the gift of your ancestors? Because I was working with a school that had many different ethnicities. So different people had different questions for the tree.
And what will be the, do you know what the question will be?
No.
You don't
know.
So they'll come up with it together when you're all in the same room.
Yes. And then they'll create the parts of the tree, and people who come to the conference will then have an opportunity to make their statement and see it all put together.
And if our listeners wanted to see the trees that you've already created, where, how do they see them?
Go to createpeaceproject.org and go to projects, and under the projects you'll see the singing trees, and and then on the page that has a description of it, at the bottom it says see the forest.
And so you click on that, and that's when you see it? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. Yeah. So I recommend it. I've had the luxury, the beautiful honor, actually, of being able to see images of most of these trees. They're stunningly beautiful. So I recommend going to the website.
The one that you helped to fund with Bread for the Journey is called the Seasons of Hope Singing Trees. And that the partnership was with Ambassadors of Hope and Opportunity. They have another another part of their name. And their website is ahoproject.org. And they serve, they've served over 1,200 homeless youth in Marin County. And their intervention with kids between 16 to 25 is often the difference between somebody being on the street and being incarcerated the rest of their life, or somebody living a productive life. And we made four 8-foot by 8-foot panels of an oak tree in four seasons. And this was inspired by Stephen Dynan's Shift Network's view of 2012. So we made an oak tree in the winter of wellness, in the spring of sustainability, in the summer of serenity or peace, and the autumn of abundance. And 23 homeless and formerly homeless and socially conscious youth were the design team, and they were paid to work on it. And through this financial support, some of them were able to get off the street and get apartments. And they went to different schools, and they shared the story of the singing tree. They shared the story of AHO's support for homeless youth. And 1,000 kids made images, and each mural had a different driving question. What is your view of wellness? What, you know, what does wellness look like? What does sustainability look like? What does serenity look like? What does abundance look like? And these murals are going to be exhibited at the Marin Civic Center in the summer, which we're thrilled about. And they've been at the Thoreau Center for Sustainability and at different community centers and different schools. And many of the murals I make are portable, so that the vision, fresh vision and hope of young people can do its work. As young people want to do real work. And I think a lot of the alienation they have from our institutions is that they want to have impact. And so that's one of the reasons I make murals that can be moved around.
So that they can they can feel a sense of its impact in the world.
Yeah.
They're coming. I know you've had many presentations here in Marin County where the kids come. People can see the murals, and the kids actually talk about what challenges they have faced in their life and where they are today.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
So who knows what will happen as you do this retreat, this conference in Sarajevo this summer. I understand you're going to be filming it as well.
Yes, we are raising funds as part of our Indiegogo campaign to document Ross's work with the students in the U.S. and Sarajevo and the young Bosnian artists who will be designing the singing tree. And we want to glean the wisdom of this brave and visionary and hopeful group of people who will be gathered at this place that, you know, was a symbol of our travesties, both in World War One and in what happened in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And
I didn't know that we have to close the show in a minute, but I hadn't known before this that Sarajevo was where the first shot was fired that began World War One.
Yes.
And I'm just impressed that these young people have come together and want to create a way to commemorate that by really talking about world peace. And
yes.
Lori, I'm really touched and honored by the work that you're doing, and I hope that our listeners will go to createpeaceproject.org, pay close attention to when the Indiegogo campaign kicks off. Certainly, you can make a contribution at createpeaceproject.org for the trip that you're taking to Sarajevo, and may it get a lot of publicity. I'm so grateful for your work.
And thank you, Mariana, for this opportunity to share what's in my heart, and thank you for the support you've given to this work.
Oh, great. You're welcome.
Yes.
You're welcome.
Yes.
So to our listening audience, as you know, Bread for the Journey is a nonprofit organization, and if you find a place in your heart to make a financial contribution, or if you'd like to start a chapter of Bread for the Journey in your town, please go to our website at breadforthejourney.org. If we all pitch in a little bit, we can change the world.
Woohoo!
And I close today, as I do every show, with this. May all beings be happy. May all beings be safe. May all beings be free.
We hope our program inspired you this week. Please join Mariana Cacciatore for another edition of Bread for the Journey next Saturday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.